Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. As we continue to engage government executives who are changing the way government does business, we are here on location in New York City. State and local governments are under tremendous pressure to do more with less. Nowhere is this more evident than in human service delivery. That social safety net, bringing to those most in need a leg up, well-being, and ultimately self-sufficiency. Today, we will explore the challenges being faced and innovations being forged with our very special guest, Seth Diamond, Executive Deputy Commissioner of New York City's Family Independence Administration. Seth, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Stuart Vansky. Stuart, welcome.
Thanks, Michael.
Seth, let's start out learning more about your office. Would you give us an overview of the history, mission, and evolution of the New York City Family Independence Administration? How does it support the mission of the Human Resources Administration, HRA?
Well, HRA is New York City's social services agency, the agency that provides primarily cash assistance, food stamps, and Medicaid to the city's population. The Family Independence Administration is one part of HRA that deals particularly with people who are receiving benefits but on a short-term basis and are either transitioning to work or need help getting to work. So we focus on the population that wants to move on and can move on to employment. There are other parts of the agency that deal with more vulnerable populations.
What's the size or sense of scale? What's the budget for FIA?
Overall, the agency has about 15,000 employees. FIA has about a third of those, about 5,000. Most of those work at about 50 field offices throughout the city in offices that administer either cash assistance or food stamp benefits. And then we have some administrative support centrally.
Well, picking up on that, generally, what are the benefits or the portfolio that you manage? Could you give us a sense of the programs under your portfolio?
Yes, there are two main programs. One is cash assistance, what could be commonly called welfare, which is a cash benefit, and people who receive that typically also receive food stamps and Medicaid as part of their benefit package. Those people also are involved or required to be involved in employment programs that we also administer to help them get to work. Separately, we have a food stamp program, which is largely for low-income working people and some elderly and disabled people. They receive just food stamp benefits, which is a food assistance to help them buy food. So two very large programs. When I first started at HRA in 1995, welfare was by far the biggest program, 1.1 million people, and I think food stamps was probably 200,000 or 300,000. Over time, where we are today, the numbers have almost exactly reversed. Now there's 1.6 million people receiving food stamps and about 350,000 receiving welfare. So it's been a total reversal, and we can talk about the reasons for that, but that's one of the things I'm most proud of what we've been able to accomplish in that area.
Now that you've provided us with a sense of the larger organization, could you describe your role leading FIA?
FIA is the part of HRA that's focused on getting people to work and supporting them while they're working. So we have a definite mission, and we try and make sure that everyone who works there understands that we are there for the purpose of helping people get to work, and that we insist that everyone who can work must work. And we have a very clear mandate to do that, and we really want to make a great emphasis on supporting working people. A lot of what I do is trying to make sure that all our programs are structured around the mission of what we do, which is employment and supporting employment, and making sure that all the people who work for me understand how important it is to not deviate from that message.
And what's a day like in the life of the FIA Executive Deputy Commissioner in the city the size of New York City?
Well, it's hectic. And when I explain to people what it's like working at an agency like HRA, I often say it's like working in an emergency room. I'm not a medical person or never worked in an emergency room, but what you watch on TV shows is accurate. I think it's similar in that you come in each morning not knowing what's going to hit you. You are confronted almost immediately upon walking in with things that come from all directions. You work as fast and as hard as you can on something, but you have to pick a time where you can get the patient or the issue stable. You do the best you can in the time you have, and then you have to move on to the next thing. And if you don't work as quickly as you can and you don't learn that you have to move on at some point, you drown. And at the end of the day, this happens all day, every day. And at the end of the day, you hope that you've improved some of the patients and that you can come back another day. Other parts of government may be more like scheduled surgery or something, where you have the luxury of time, where you can sort of pick and choose a little more. When you're in an agency like HRA with so many issues and so many people that you're supporting, you don't have that luxury, and you must deal in a sort of a constant environment of change and need to deal with all kinds of issues.
Given the hectic nature of your daily experience, what are the top three challenges that you face in your position, and what are you doing to address those challenges?
Well, I think especially now when we're going through a difficult economy and our mission is to make sure that people are working, we face a lot of people who are doubting that the sincerity or our ability of continued progress. During the welfare reform era, which is sort of from 1996 till now, for most of that period, we've had a generally healthy economy. There have been some ups and downs in the years, but generally it's been a positive economy in New York, and that, of course, has been a tremendous benefit. This is the first time in the past couple of years when we haven't had that. And I think a lot of people sort of had an expectation that that would lead to certain changes in the way we serve people, our inability to get people into jobs. And one of the things that is important to us and I take great pride in is that despite the difficult economic times, we've been very successful in continuing to place people into jobs. And I think a lot of that is because we have a sustained focus and a message, and we haven't let up on our insistence that people go to work. We've, of course, benefited from maybe a quirk or an unrealized part of the city's economy, which is that at the entry level, which is where a lot of our people get jobs, the city is still is quite healthy. If the economic downturn were to go on much longer, although there are strong signs that it's not, that could change. But the entry level has still been a very healthy part of the city's economy. Areas like healthcare, education, even when tourism was strong, areas that support tourism, which are really the areas that we deal in primarily, have been great for us and continue to be very strong. And so that's something that people don't realize when they think about it. So in this environment, keeping the focus and keeping the morale up and keeping our own staff and the public focus on the fact that, yes, there are jobs, we can get people jobs, and there is still an expectation that people go to work, that I think is the most important thing in the current economic environment. Then we're also dealing with very difficult budget times. One of the difficulties of working at an agency like HRA is that we're totally counter-cyclical. When the city and the country are going through their most difficult times, the demands for HRA services are the greatest. So the whole city, of course, is having great difficulty, and we have to do our part to help. So we're trying to balance being able to continue to deliver quality services and that support people with the reality that we do have to make cutbacks.
Seth, I'd like to know a little bit more about yourself. Could you give us a sense of your career path? What brought you to your current position?
Well, I sort of like a lot of people in whatever careers, and it seems to be particularly in government, I fell into this a little bit. I went to college at Brown University and was always interested in government and public policy, and went to law school sort of with that in mind. After law school at NYU, I worked for a law firm in Washington because I was trying to sort of combine a little bit of some of the more traditional legal work with what I hoped was with a little bit of a public policy component to it. I decided after working a little bit at the law firm that I really wanted to get more directly into government, and there was an opportunity in New York City working for a local elected official named Andrew Stein. He was the president of the city council at that time, and I worked for him for 4 years and got a real introduction to government and to public service and what it meant to work for the city and a range of issues. It was really a great opportunity to see the whole city and the diverse needs of the city and all the kinds of things that are involved in working in city government at a very high level at a young age. And then I had an opportunity to work for Mayor Giuliani when he started his administration. And one of the issues that he was working on early on was reforming the welfare system. And then that led to a job at HRA. And I was lucky enough to come in really at the beginning, the infancy of welfare reform. You couldn't have asked for a better time for someone who was interested in government. It was, of course, a hectic, crazy time in terms of the work, in terms of there was not yet a public consensus around the need for welfare reform in the very earliest days, in New York at least. So at times it was very stressful and difficult. But for someone who was ambitious and interested in these issues and wanted to be involved, it was really a great time. And I've been able to be involved in it ever since. You know, in government service, the ability at a high level to have sort of the gift of a sustained period of commitment to a particular issue is something you don't usually get. You know, people move on from job to job. There are elections that come that often interfere with people's desires to stay. But I've been able to stay with HRA for 15 years, and that's given me this great ability to really have a sustained focus on welfare and see multiple issues through, which has really been very rewarding.
So given your wealth of experience, what makes an effective human service delivery leader?
Well, I think you have to be clear on what your message is and what you're doing, and you have to communicate that. The leadership message is terribly important to both your people that you're working with and then the public. And I think you have to have a clear message that is understandable and that is not ambiguous. When you're It's 5,000 people, you're not leading a country, but the same kinds of principles apply, that if you have a message that is not black and white, it gets very much diluted or misunderstood. And so one of the great aspects of welfare reform in the pre-welfare reform era, I think there was sort of some ambiguity about what the goal of being of welfare programs were. You know, there were some people who advocated that maybe we shouldn't evaluate them on whether the roles went up or down or people got jobs because there were other issues in play. I think the single greatest thing, success of the welfare reform era, is that it clarified and made unambiguous that the goal of welfare reform was to get people jobs and help reduce the cash assistance caseload. That allowed social service and people working in the welfare field to then convey a clear message to the people they were working with, which I don't think they were able to do before. And if you can convey a clear message and a sustained message and one you stick to, I think it allows everybody to sort of orient themselves around that. You have to communicate it frequently and almost to the point of where you may get tired of hearing it yourself. But if you don't do that, it's always to new audiences, new people who didn't hear it, and people forget, and they also have busy, hectic lives with lots of things going on, and they're not, you know, hanging on every word you say necessarily. So you have to repeat it. You have to do it personally often, not just through memos or things like that. But I think that's really the single most important thing, is having a message and communicating it frequently, clearly, and effectively to a large audience.
Because really what you're doing in this situation over the last, say, 15 years is transforming the way things are done. And I think you're right about the fact that you need that consistent morale booster when you're out in the lines.
Yes. But because we've had such a successful program, people embrace the message. They want to be a part of it. They enjoy working on it because it's something that is exciting. They feel like they're being productive. They feel like they're contributing. And they feel like they're sort of being on a winning team.
I was curious about, because you joined HRA and right at the cusp of welfare reform, right, which really did shift the focus from, regardless of what you did as a client, we wanted to provide you a floor of income that you wouldn't sink below, to a work-first model. How large of a cultural transformation was that, and how did you work your way through that?
That was a significant shift, both in terms of the dynamic you talked about, sort of changing the way people viewed welfare, and of course all the individual programs, the employment programs, were not necessarily geared to moving people into employment quickly. That had to change. People's attitudes and relationships with the people they served had to change. I had the benefit then, of course, of the mayor and the commissioner being very strong and powerful leaders and communicating that effectively. And I was able to follow that message, and I think that helped tremendously. And over time, again, I think this public consensus that developed really helped, because in the early days, in New York City started sort of before the national implementation. We started implementing in 1995, and there was tremendous concern in the city and opposition in some quarters to what we were doing and how we were exploiting people, it was viewed, and a whole range of issues. But over time, I think, again, as people saw a range of politicians from President Clinton and other Democratic leaders embracing welfare reform, and again, when the success happened without the tremendous downsides, that really changed people's attitudes. And you've seen, and this sort of helps and hurts, but you've seen in the past few election cycles, welfare in general has not been an issue. And I think that's both a credit to the success of the program. I think at times it sort of hampers what should be a debate on some issues around that because people either are afraid or don't want to touch it. But I think in general, you have to view that as a tremendous victory for the program and what we've done.
How are social services delivered in New York City? We will ask Seth Diamond, Executive Deputy Commissioner of New York City's Family Independence Administration, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.